Hi, welcome to the Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show. I'm your host, Maria Els, for tonight's show. And I just want to start off with, just giving God the thanks for another day. And, and if it's not God who you believe in, the Creator, I want to give honor to those who came before us, our ancestors who have fought the fight and who have been showing us that Black lives have always mattered. They have always mattered to Black people. And now the world is telling us that our lives matter, that Black lives matter. And we're hoping that this momentum continues and people continue to join in the fight for justice. I'm not sure if equality is actually what we're looking for now, but more of justice and being treated humane and decent. This show was founded by Reverend Dr. Floyd D. Harris Jr. And it was founded basically to showcase and highlight what Black Lives Matter is meant to do, which is expose the injustices, prepare people with knowledge, and then use that knowledge to fight for better policies, to fight for better treatment. And to fight just for our lives to matter and to show that our lives matter. So there has been a lot going on over the past month. It was several deaths, Ahmaud, Breonna Taylor, and it sent America that same kind of message and that same imagery that the Sidians brought to us, where we saw police officers hosing down people, people being beaten with batons and bats, and people having dogs sicked on them. And America saw that on their TV sets. And it was a set of Americans who didn't think that racism and the brutality that comes with racism existed to that extent. They had been sheltered or tucked away from seeing the day-to-day things that Black people had to endure, and especially had to endure when they raised their voices in protest. Or even didn't even have to raise our voices, just gathering peacefully and standing was often a reason to inflict brutality on us, even back in Martin Luther King days. And so now we are in our current times where George Floyd gave that picture that really got to the core of how we are treated, even when we are being compliant. There seems to be a image and narrative that has been created that if a Black person is treated some kind of way by law enforcement, then they had to have done something. And so George Floyd was definitely not the only example of that, but the most current example of that, because it was caught on video. And so it pulled to the heartstrings of some who may have wanted to speak and just said, well, maybe it'll get better. I know we have freedom fighters who have been out here and they have definitely been in the trenches before Black Lives Matter even started. We have some here. Dr. Floyd Harris is definitely one, but he's one of many who have been on the front lines. And one thing I am excited about with this new energy that is going into Black Lives Matter is we have more people stepping up, because community activism and community activists and those who are out on the front lines of activism, whether it's for police brutality, whether it's for housing rights, whether it's for environmental justice, you get tired. We definitely need more people coming in to take on some of those responsibilities and duties. But this can be a thankless job. Often people that are out on the front lines for justice, they don't get paid. You know, they don't receive a paycheck. They often give more than they have sometimes. And whether that's their energy, whether that's financially, whether that's lending their ear. So I do want to just put that out there that, you know, those who are joining in and who are having a bigger presence, that, you know, we need you to take a certain leg of the race. You know, in a relay, you have four different legs of the race. So we would definitely welcome those who are ready to come in and help stand for justice. So tonight, the title of the show is Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show. BLM is more than a hashtag. So just first, just a little history about Black Lives Matter and Black Lives Matter movement. And first, it has a rallying cry against racial profiling that came up with Trayvon Martin. Even though that wasn't an officer, he still is not, even though he was not an officer, he still had that same mentality that officers often have, where it's, you know, profiling, number one. Number two, feeling like he had deserved more respect than he was willing to give. And number three, using biases to his following was based off biases. So we know that it became a rallying cry first, Black Lives Matter. And then we had a few activists who, women based out of Oakland, who further developed and furthered the movement as we saw more deaths across the country at the hands of law enforcement. And it used to be this radical idea, you know, several years ago. Alicia Garza was the co-founder of the movement for Black Lives, and she took this on and began her and two other women out of Oakland began to make this a household name. But of course, it didn't happen without scrutiny. A lot of people said, well, hey, you know, aren't they a terrorist group? They're inciting violence. They're rioting, you know, across the United States. And then we had the shoot of the police in Dallas. And so then it was even more vilified. And we're saying that the Black Lives Matter movement was promoting violence, that it was causing a divide, and should and tried to get it classified as a terrorist group. So then we move, and so some people just disassociated with it. We had politicians who disassociated with it. We had some leaders, you know, who disassociated with it because they felt that it was too radical. And then we have our current day, so where things shifted. And so now we have this thing where now everybody's embracing Black Lives Matter. They are, corporations are embracing it. We have people, the clergy who is now embracing it. And across the United States, they are, everybody's pushing in Black Lives. Everybody wants to be a part of the Black Lives Matter movement. And I'm saying everybody, and that may be generalizing, but people that hadn't been interested before are now interested in Black Lives Matter. And so that brings us to, is it becoming commercial? You know, so that's the topic of our show tonight. If you'd like to call in, I'm normally live streaming, but I'm not able to do that just yet. So if you'd like to call in and speak, please call in to 516-387-1474. You can call in to 516-387-1474. So I'm going to go ahead and go to a couple of the I'm going to start with Fresno. So we had several police killings in Fresno, but we had a few that just broke through and put the spotlight on police brutality in Fresno. So we have Dr. Harris has been out and speaking out about how police have treated the community ever since his younger days, you know. For the past 30 years, he's been involved in improving his community and making sure the community is treated with decency and respect by those who govern our community, and that being, unfortunately, law enforcement, probably over-governing. And so protests here started, Cop Watch was started by Dr. Harris and several others, Rafael Vichia, Gloria Hernandez was definitely part, Dr. Crozier, and there's been many that have come along the way and allies. So more than I can name, but they definitely have my respect and recognition. So we knew there was a problem here, but I say that it may have come to a peak with the, we had 2015 killing of Freddie Centeno. He was not armed. He had a water hose handle in his hand, and the family called out the police to help defuse the situation, but they did not call the police to come out and murder their loved one. So Freddie Centeno in 2015, and then what brought it to a peak here in Fresno was the killing of Dylan Noble. So in July of 2016, we had 18-year-old Dylan Noble, who was identified as a white male, who was basically gunned down and murdered by Fresno PD officers. And a cry, you know, began to come out about, hey, it's not just Black lives who are being violated by police brutality, but we also have white people who are also dying at the hands of police officers. So we had a young activist, Justin Medina, and he led a Black Lives Matter protest. And so after this protest, as he was going home, he was stopped by an officer. He was stopped by him and his mom were pulled over by officers. They had trailed behind him for quite a ways, and they handcuffed him. When they pulled the car over, they handcuffed him. And of course, he's 20 years old. He hasn't been through this. He has his mom in the car, and I know how moms are because I know how I was when my son was brutalized by Fresno PD. And all of this because he was out protesting for Black Lives Matter, putting on a protest. And what he was arrested for was he was given two citations. They took the handcuffs off of him and gave him two citations for misdemeanors for obstructing the sidewalk and holding a special event without a permit. If he had been convicted, he would have faced a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. So this happened, and then 2 weeks later, there was a group who went out and rightfully to protest the killing of, I said 18, but 19-year-old Dylan Noble. And it said it was like a White Lives Matter protest. So a lot of the activists in the community, it raised a lot of questions like, okay, well, you know, why were Black protesters treated differently than white protesters? And so therefore, we got into a deeper conversation about Black Lives Matter again. And there was this movement of All Lives Matter. And as everyone knows, Black Lives Matter has never claimed that other lives didn't matter. But what we were concerned about as a movement was the mistreatment and the disparities among Black lives and how they were being taken, brutalized by police compared to other races who proportions were more in line with their population compared to ours. So then we have our most current, which came out, which was the young 16-year-old Isaiah Murrieta. And so with Isaiah, he was running from the police. There's definitely a graphic video, heart-wrenching video to me, similar just because of his age and how young he was, and that he was running, you know, away from the police, and he was shot in the back of the head. And after the shot to the back of the head, the officer exclaimed, "Good shot," to the officer who murdered young Isaiah Murrieta. So we have these things in Fresno, and though we have all of our hearts go out, and we definitely, with Black Lives Matter, are behind the movement in recognition of George Floyd as pretty much the most recent martyr, you know, of the Black Lives Matter movement. But I just needed to give a little bit of the history behind Fresno's encounters to show that we have had people and we have had an outcry in Fresno related to are related to lives that have been lost by law enforcement. And what concerns many of us that have been a part of the movement, and some of us who have been a part of protesting and speaking out against police brutality before, it's been watered down. Like it has been commercialized. And so instead of people really looking at what injustices have been done and where that source is, which is with our law enforcement, our lawmakers, and then this immunity that is granted to officers to pretty much always have an excuse for doing wrong. And so we have across America, we have law enforcement who's saying, we support Black Lives Matter. In Florida, if I'm not mistaken, officers on the SWAT team walked off the job because they said the chief kneeled in support with the Black Lives Matter protest. So we have law enforcement putting this, almost trying to say, well, we accept Black Lives Matter and we're going to support Black Lives Matter, almost to try and use that to rectify the massive and systematic wrongdoings that have occurred at the hands of officers. So that's one thing, that we have law enforcement embracing it, and we're skeptical because they are the perpetrators. So when the perpetrator is saying, okay, well, I'm not the perpetrator, now, you know, we support what you're doing, how do we know that that's sincere? How do we know that they are truly recognizing Black lives everywhere, Fresno and everywhere else? And we don't. So that's where the skepticism comes in. And then we also have those who are politicians, you know. We have them saying, well, you know, I support Black Lives Matter, but have your actions, have your previous actions, have your current actions shown that you support Black lives? What is your track record? We're letting a lot of, you know, it's a lot of excitement that people, the police are coming to the table. Well, they've always come to the table, and that commissions are being formed. Well, we've had commissions that have been formed, and they have made promises. They have said that they would reform the police department and how they train. And they've done some things slightly. They have a mental health crisis response team. And from what I understand, here and there, they do come through. But there's still these day-to-day occurrences that never make the news, that never make the television. And what they're doing is still brutalizing people. You know, we hear about the deaths because it's the loss of life. That's shock value in itself, that an unarmed person could lose their life over. Usually these things are happening over something they didn't do, or small infractions like jaywalking or selling a cigarette, or, you know, just small things that, or a tail light, you know, something wrong with a car. And they just should never lead to death. And so they're sensational, but there are those things that happen on a daily basis. And we don't find out about them until years later, when we ask for public records and reports showing that how many claims have been settled. Here in Fresno, there are several pages of claims that have been settled by the Fresno Police Department by taxpayers, using taxpayers' dollars, up to $700 million that we've been out of in excessive force claims, wrongful death lawsuits. And this is money that once they're paid out, these families are basically silenced. And so who keeps speaking? A lot of the times that weight falls on the shoulders of our leaders, of our community activists. So, you know, we have a lot of things that we're concerned about with this new acceptance of Black Lives Matter and how it's being used by just about everybody. And some people, of course, like law enforcement politicians, local politicians, were skeptical of. There was information that came out that showed that it was only one city council member, which was Miguel Arias, only one city council member who didn't take money from the police department. So they are ingrained into our politics through unions who give money to get them, help with getting them elected. So how can we expect the same people who are getting funded to go against, in a sense, the bite the hand that's feeding them? Is that unrealistic? I think it's unrealistic to expect for them to bite the hand that feeds them. So on one hand, we have politicians saying, well, this is our opportunity and we want to sit down and let's work something out. But we've been there. We've done that. And now we have a police commission that's formed, and while we have some very upstanding people there, the first concern is the chair of the commission. The chair of the commission is former Officer Oliver Baines. So if they're also still feeding him, in quotes, then why would he press to do what we would like, which is defund, reallocate monies to community services? And there was a forum on GB Wire where they said, well, even if we defund the police, the money's not going to go into the community. Well, you need to explain that to us, because it was taken from the community and used to build a bigger police budget. We start having our police officers be our teachers, our police officers be our youth development professionals, the police be our mentors, Santa Claus. You know, we see them at the carnivals and block parties, and, you know, they're shaking our hands and being our friends. But we didn't ask. We have people that can do that. We have a community full of people that are capable of doing that. So if we do, then why would we need to pack our communities and our community centers with officers and fund those community centers with money that is given to officers? Why couldn't that money, if it was taken from the community, I don't understand why it wouldn't go back to the community if and when, if we have it our way, the police get defunded. And even defunded can sometimes throw people off, because they think right away, well, okay, you're going to just do away with officers in one day. But it's more about redirecting those funds, and taking those funds and using it in areas that would in themselves create a more safe community. So it's not as a thing of getting rid of all of our officers, but it's how do we use officers in a way where they are responding to serious and violent crimes, and they and we are getting those people who would be a harm to others off the street into a place where they can work on some of the things that may have led up to them exhibiting the behaviors or the violent behaviors that would pose a risk to themselves and those in their family or community. But even that, we put this face on Black lives as these violent people, but really 10% of Black people ever commit a violent crime. Yet the narrative created by media tells a different story. So even that in itself, so why do we need these officers in our communities as heavily as they are, and why couldn't that be reallocated to these leaders who they speak so highly of in the community, yet these leaders sometimes have to bend over backwards and shut their mouths at the table just to get crumbs and money and resources that should have been already allocated and going into our community, and not to beef up people to practice suppression tactics to people who honestly don't deserve it. Because as well as those stops that they make where they find something, they make a lot more stops that they don't find anything. And I'm hoping they don't, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, people are having those opportunities where they don't have to turn to illegal or criminal and violent means to make a living or to get by. And we could do that if we have more resources in the community. So we have our law enforcement saying Black Lives Matter, we join. We have our politicians saying Black Lives Matter, we join. We even have our school districts saying Black Lives Matter. But yet, where's the action? Where have you shown that track record? Because our city has not shown that track record. Our police department has not shown that track record. And to be honest, our school districts, and specifically Fresno Unified, has not shown that action. We had someone brought out the killing of a Roosevelt High School student by an officer several years back, a little over a decade ago. And anytime I think about police on campuses, I think about that incident. And the whole reason that police were even put on these campuses was to respond to possible threats, because there were a lot of massive school shootings across the United States. And so in response, you know, they started putting officers in schools. And who's footing the bill? Of course, that's coming from school budgets. And what could that school budget money be going to? Well, Fresno Unified, it was supposed to be going to low-performing students, minority students, but instead we invested in a spot shooter that hasn't solved the crime and hasn't prevented anyone from getting killed. All it does is tell them where the shot came from. Well, you know, you can figure that out if you got some good detectives. And people that know how to ask the right questions to get to the bottom of things. So Fresno Unified paid for an expensive toy, an experiment that really hasn't shown that it can save lives or solve crimes. I haven't, of the recent murders, the only murders that I've known that have been solved was the murders of folks in the Hmong community. And they found those killers within a few weeks due to the pressure and due to, honestly, the resources that the Hmong community brought together to get the crime solved and fight it. But we have countless other deaths and murders in Fresno that Fresno Police Department have basically turned into cold cases. You know, so how are they really protecting, and how would an officer in a school be able to prevent a mass shooting? Because we've seen in some mass shooting cases where officers were there and they ran to get help, ran whatever you ran for. You should have been running to try to put a bullet in the mass shooter's head, you know, and not running away from the scene when you really took a note to risk your life to protect the rights and the lives of others. So we got some officers that maybe shouldn't be officers. So how can the school be behind Black Lives Matter when they increase the Fresno Unified Schools budget to officers? How is that showing that Black Lives Matter in our schools when we have officers that are being funded by our school, that and that money could be going into definitely putting a strong effort into chipping away at the achievement gap between Black and white students, because there is a huge achievement gap. And in good conscience, why wouldn't you invest in the mind of a child and instead you would invest in a false sense of security that officers on campus give? Because it really is a false sense of security if you're saying these officers are on campus to make sure someone doesn't come on campus and commit a mass shooting. I know campus security that can do that. It's being vigilant, you know, being vigilant about who's coming onto the campus. When did they come on? Making sure somebody greets them, making sure somebody directs them to the office so that person can be identified and we know their purpose and who they are and why they're there. And when that person is not supposed to be onto the campus, taking the means to make sure that they are escorted or they leave the campus. But if that person is coming to commit a mass shooting, they're not going to let an officer stop them or anyone else. And the fact of the matter is, we're doing a real disservice by using money that could be used for our children, our youth, and placing it into beefing up and keeping things going for officers here in Fresno, like spot shooters and officers on campus, when we could be saving lives by putting that into education and opportunity and hope for our youth. And I just don't see how an officer is going to make that happen, as opposed to investing our monies and our budget into our youth. I'm normally on Facebook Live. I probably don't have too many listeners because I am not doing Facebook Live along with this. If there is some of our listeners out there listening online, please call in if you like to 516-387-1474 to 516-387-1474. Once again, you are listening to the Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter show. So we have just covered a little bit of BLM history. It's not a long, it's not a history that goes far back. It goes back about 7 years. In talking about some of the cases here in Fresno, from Freddie Centeno to Dylan Noble to Isaiah Murrieta, and several cases of police brutality that was also caught on tape and went nationwide, but did not receive the same type of attention that, of course, taken a life permanently would receive. But those individuals are traumatized. We have lots of families and individuals who have been traumatized, even if they did not lose the life of their family member. It still causes trauma, just having a negative interaction or being a victim of police brutality. And then we have our most current, Mr. Isaiah, young Isaiah Murrieta, who was shot in the back of the head here in Fresno by Fresno PD. And the family is still seeking justice. And the family wants to see those the officers prosecuted. And they're not taking a deal. And that's really hard to do sometimes, because when a family goes through a crisis like losing a loved one or being a victim of police brutality, that is something that you just want to be over. You know, you just didn't want it to happen. It turned your life upside down. And it's hard to keep grieving, and it's hard to keep bearing, and it's hard to keep fighting when you're grieving and you're hurting. So we have had those families who have just took that grief and took that hurt and said, we can't do it. And they'll settle just to be able to get back to trying to heal. And it's really hard to heal when you're fighting and when you're still fighting. So it does cause trauma. And then we have our current setting where we have this police commission who has been created in Fresno. And like I said, there are definitely quality people on there, but it's top heavy with law enforcement. So we are going to prepare to address that. And we have some plans that I will not put out because they need to be developed and strategically applied. But we are not settling with having a police commission that is, I counted 10 either former, current, or affiliated with the judicial and law enforcement, 10 individuals out of 37. But yet we don't have but one or two people on there that have dealt with police brutality. We have zero, let me tell you, zero impacted family members on that commission who can speak from the voice of the victim. That is unacceptable. And we have people on there, even if they're not law enforcement, we have a few who are law enforcement sympathizers. We have, you know, law enforcement doesn't only fund politicians, they also fund some of our trustees. You know, our president of, and her name slips my mind, but who was funded by police. We have a board, Fresno Unified Board trustees who have backed creating a larger police budget when we were asking to get police out and to eliminate a budget for police. We have people on that police commission who voted in favor of increasing the police budget. And so that's worrisome. And then we have those who mean well, but their area of activism is not linked to standing and putting forth policies and demands and putting together actions to combat police brutality, expose the viciousness of police brutality, and to also put actions together to create the pressure needed to make them do things differently. So we don't have but a few people who on that commission who truly represent this whole thing, why it was created, Black Lives Matter. We keep getting away from that and making it this kumbaya type of meetings that we're having, kumbaya type of panels that we're having, kumbaya type of commissions that are being formed. And it's just not time to be peaceful. It's just not time to play nice with them. And we need people who are going to push, organize, push, pressure, organize them to be uncomfortable and know that we're not going anywhere, and know that we are willing to take further actions to make sure that demands are met, because they make promises and then we think that everything's okay. And now they're using Black Lives Matter to, you know, tag on to it. And Black Lives Matter is so much more than that. Black Lives Matter, while it does not promote violence, it also does not say we need to be passive. It also is unapologetic about the pressure and us exposing the systematic things that are in place, the police brutality, use control, and harm, and really diminish Black lives, and are disrespectful and disregard Black lives, from how we're arrested to how our bodies are treated, to how our bodies are treated even after they've murdered us, you know, staying out longer, being exposed. And like I said, the day-to-day things that if we added them up, we'd be even more outraged. You know, we have deaths, but do you know how many excessive force incidents take place in a day in cities across, in Fresno and cities across the country? That's where the real damage is being done. Those things that seem small, I always say the devil's in the details. And it's those details about how we're treated on a day-to-day basis. Those things that don't get captured on TV. Those things that don't get reported. And those things that get reported, but they try to put a hush over it by putting a price tag on it. Okay, we'll give you this much to just go away. A commission. Well, we'll give you this prestige. And, you know, people are just so happy and eager to be invited to the table that I'm wondering, have they really took the time to critically think about why they're there? What purpose will they serve? Would it have been wise for those who have asked to say, well, you know, this, how is my voice going to be collectively heard when the voices of law enforcement and those pro-law enforcement and those that would be against defunding are so top-heavy on this commission? Because just because you're invited to the table and just because you're excited about being invited, because when you, like I said, this is a thankless job, you know, being out in the community, promoting community activism, promoting health in the community, wealth in the community, whatever it is, it's tiring and it's often thankless, you know. So it is exciting to, you know, be for someone to finally say, hey, okay, well, we want to inform this and we want to sit down and listen and we want to hear what you have to say. But is that a smoke screen? Are those smoking mirrors? You know, and have those that have been asked to the commission, have you really thought about, is this the right way? Is this the right commission? Because you have power still, too, to say no. You know, no, this is not acceptable to us. It's not acceptable that is top heavy with law enforcement. It's not acceptable that Jerry Dyer will definitely be a part of this. You know, it's not acceptable that we don't have people who have been fighting for people and against police brutality for years now, you know, some for decades, you know. No, is it right to not have impacted family members on this commission Why haven't they been asked? Really, to inquire the intent, because we're not dealing with dummies. You know, we're dealing with some crafty, experienced, powerful individuals with resources behind them. So we have to really think, and we have to really strategize and not get thrown off by bread and circuses. And if you don't know what bread and circuses is, it's a political term that's been used for centuries, especially in politics, and mostly applied to politics, where they come in and they do this grand performance, this grand acceptance, and they feed you and they entertain you, and you know, they give you you know, things that you wanted, and at the end of the day, you've been fed and entertained, and you've taken your eyes off the fact that the person that is feeding you is the person that you oppose, because they've sort of romanticized these struggles and said, hey, well, you know, yes, we want you here. So look up bread and circuses. Are we being taken, you know, once again? Is this bread and circuses? And is Black Lives Matter the new commercial and the new tool that they've used to turn against us in a way? You know, we'll act like we accept this. We'll act like we're part of this. And to show, we'll sit down. To show, we'll form a commission. And we'll even let them paint Black Lives Matter in front of City Hall, and we'll support it, you know, because that was supported by the city and a popular DJ. And art is beautiful. Art is a way to bring people together. Art is a way to unify. Art and food, right? But what are the intentions? What aren't we seeing? What are in those details? Where is the devil at? Because he's hiding there. You know, what details is he hiding in? And I think the most valiant thing that these people, the upstanding people on this commission, can do is denounce this commission and say, we'll form our own. Denounce this commission and say, we form our own. If you're not caught in the bread and circuses, if you really care about moving forward and people being included in this conversation on this commission that should be on there, impacted people who have lost their loved ones to police brutality or have been victims of police brutality, our grassroots people who have been standing for proper and fair treatment of citizens by officers, Black lives and others, and getting these officers, this top-heavy officers, off of there. Who has really stood for the community? It's really only two people on that list that I have seen in action, officers, and that's Captain Salazar and former Captain Garner when he worked in Southwest Fresno, but both are from Southwest Fresno. And even though I think they haven't even done enough to speak up and speak out, I could see them more so than the police union, president of the police union, being on there. We have former detectives that are on there. It just, you know, and some of them are connected to the community. But why are they scared to have impacted people there on that commission? Why are they scared and haven't placed those who have, more of those who have fought against police brutality? And why is it packed out with people that they go to? And what was the criteria of even being referred to this commission? How were they picked? Who were they chosen by? Why aren't we asking these questions? We need to be asking these questions. We need to know. And from what I've seen so far, it's people on that list I respect, but I respect you a whole lot more if you all banded together and said, this is not what this commission should be made up of, and this is not what this commission should look like. That would just do my heart good. That would do Fresno heart good. That would give us hope that, you know what, we really are going to change things, because they're selling us the same song and dance. And those of you that are seniors to this and veterans to this, I know you see it. And don't let them use this Black Lives Matter and acceptance of Black Lives Matter and these smoke screens to once again sugarcoat the truth, to once again sugarcoat their wrongdoing. I really wish I'd have had a caller call in. I know if I'd have been live, we would have. So you've had to hear me talk and give my opinion, which is not an uneducated opinion. It's definitely an educated opinion on how Black Lives Matter is being used. And we have to keep it more than just an hashtag. And we can't allow it to be co-opted and turned into just a hashtag that's popular to use when you're trying to smooth over or sugarcoat lies, when you're trying to tell us that we're eating something sweet when we know it's poop. So I just want to end tonight's show with letting you know about some things that are good going on. Dr. Harris is also the founder of Fresno Freedom School. I'm board president of Fresno Freedom School. And we started a stay at home and grow your own garden, grow your own vegetables here over the course of 3 months. And the fruits of the labor are ready. So on July 11th, we will be having a farm stand style farmers market to just show how we did things during COVID. We had 17 of our youth that planted vegetables. Some vegetables did well, some vegetables didn't do so well, but they still had the experience. I have one caller, but let me just finish with the announcement really quick. So that'll be July 11th from 8 to 12. You can come and see what the stay at home and grow your own vegetable garden look like. You'll get to meet some of our Freedom School students. You'll find more out about the Fresno Freedom School and how you can get involved. We'll have applications. We'll have samples of some of our favorite recipes grown with fresh produce, like our fried okra, our green tomatoes, and our biggest, most favorite recipe of all, which is the eggplant pizza. So that's July 11th, and it will take place at 313 West Valencia in Fresno, California, 93706. And please come out and support. So I'm going to bring this caller in. Hello, caller 2810.
Good evening, Marge. This is Dr. Harris.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Couldn't get on Facebook Live, so had to do a lot of talking. but I still think it was worth bringing up, and I can definitely send the recording out to people to listen to and comment on.
Well, there's ways to get your show back up to the live stream, so it's just a matter of learning how to do that. Like to commend you for doing your show solo tonight. I know sometimes we're used to doing our shows with a partner or a lot of folks calling in, But sometimes it's important that you have the space so that you can be able to teach the people without being rushed or without being cut off or worrying about someone else in the studio having time to chime in on your conversation. I felt that you really did your homework. You really did your statistics. You really looked at your data, and you were really, really on point tonight as far as everything that you were saying. I like to, if I will, or if I may, start with giving our condolences to all of our people across the country and in Fresno, as I renamed Fresno as Mississippi Fresno. What has happened to George Floyd has happened in Fresno many, many, many times. I want to say that those of our people across the country keep putting the pressure on your local government because that's the only way that we're going to get change. If change was so easy, we would have been done had it by now or before now. But the only way we get change here in America is that we have to push back. We have to expose. We have to march. We have to protest. Unfortunately, we shouldn't have to do that. But through history, you will see that Dr. King, the only way that he got the Voting Rights Act bill passed was that he had to expose America's behind. The only way that Rosa Parks was to get folks, black folks, to be able to sit in front of the bus, she had to stand up and say, I'm tired of being sick and tired. Now, you're not going to be able to change anything until you're tired of being sick and tired. And I think people need to really understand that. You know, I'm happy to see the people here in Fresno stepping up now. Black Lives Matter has been existing in Fresno since 2015, way back with a bunch of other murders leading up to George Floyd. So Black Lives Matter, as we called it in Fresno, Black and Brown Matter, Black and Brown Lives Matter, started way back in 2015. So one will say, you know, this is all new, all the marching in the streets and this and that. But it's really old. It's new to the people who are doing it. But it's not really new to some of the people out there, because some of the people out there was here in 2015 when a lot of family members like Freddie Centennial and different people who was murdered. But for whatever the reasons, here in Fresno, the people did not come out and stand with the families with me and a lot of our colleagues, the Brown Berets and Ralphie and Gloria and Mize and Mavu. There has been a lot of groundwork that has been laid here in Fresno leading up to the George Floyd killing. And I will say that I'm happy that people are getting out in the streets, and maybe while they're out there, I can get some rest. Because I have been doing this for quite some time, many, many years with many of our colleagues here in Fresno. And so I don't want folks to, you know, look at them out there now, you know, whichever way, but be happy they're out there. I think that we have to be careful, and we have to be careful, because what happens is that when you're new to something and you don't understand the history and you don't understand the groundwork that's been laid prior or before you get out there, you will see that people can manipulate you. Okay, people can manipulate you because you don't have the history of what's been going on prior to you getting out there. I heard you say something earlier about Black Lives Matter here in Fresno. I heard you say something about how the police department says they support Black Lives Matter. I believe we have police officers across the country taking a knee, which is very interesting. We even have police officers putting their fist up in the air. But in 2015, when Black Lives Matter was here in Fresno and is still here, the Fresno Police Department did not support Black Lives Matter. They did not support the message, justice and freedom for all. The power structure did not support Black Lives Matter. Now, if I would say that if I would have went to the power structure in 2015 and said, hey, we want to paint Black Lives Matter right out here in front of City Hall, they wouldn't have went for it. But all of a sudden today, they'll go for it. Well, I heard you say earlier that there's some games being played with our movement right now. I think a lot of folk, whatever the reasons are, or some are for photo ops, some are very sincere. But I think here in Fresno, where we are, I think that the Black Lives Matter movement has been co-opted by our local government. Now, did I hear you say earlier something about a commission?
Yes, police, this new commission.
Okay.
Well, the most current commission.
I would like to speak to that, if I may. Number one, anytime that there's a crisis that goes on in a community, the white power structure, the first thing they want to do is run into the black community and start handpicking certain Negroes and handpicking certain preachers and handpicking certain activists to put them on a commission to insinuate that we have people that speaks for you because they look like you. They're your same color. You know what I mean? Same way with the Latino community. They go out and they handpick people and so on and so on. And no one is not discrediting the people, because we know all the people that's on there. They're great people. I believe they mean well. But families are asking me, Reverend Harris, who are these people? I'm getting that question. Who are these people that's on this commission that has never stood with me when my family member was killed? Now, the only person we've seen in the black community is you. So who are they? You see my point?
Yeah.
And so now the families are starting to question the motives behind why this commission was even being created. I asked the question, well, did the families have any input on the creation of the commission? I mean, they are the victims, right?
Yes.
They are the ones who are suffering, right? I mean, I don't believe anyone on the commission. I say I believe. I'm not saying I know. I'm saying I don't believe anyone on the commission has lost anyone, a loved one, to law enforcement. I don't believe. I'm not saying I know that's for sure right. I believe they haven't.
Yeah.
So now the families who are the victims of police brutality is saying, well, how do you put people that you say that is an activist, that you say is a community leader? What was the qualifications to get on this commission? I think I heard you say that earlier. What was the qualifications to get on this commission?
Yeah.
What criteria did it take to be able to to speak for those who are hurting? See, we have to be careful about how we handle things. I can take you back to Chief Dyer when he had the Fresno Police Advisory Board. That board was supposed to be a board with community leaders and activists and pastors to help bridge the gap between, to help bring good policy into the police department. But I can tell you right now that Fresno Police Advisory Board was nothing but a playground. It was nothing about, it wasn't about the community. It was all about his image. So why all of a sudden now, if Dyer is the mayor, he was a police chief over the department, he did not put good policy in the department when he was the chief of police, but all of a sudden now he's the mayor, he's going to do it?
Yes. Yes, all of
It's nothing but games. I mean, how come the city of Fresno didn't embrace Black Lives Matter back in 2015 when we were marching in the streets saying Black and Brown Lives Matter? How come they didn't embrace it then?
Right.
But you can embrace it now. You follow where I'm going?
Right.
What's the difference between Black Lives Matter now 2020 and Black Lives Matter in 2015? What's the difference? The only difference is we didn't have more black men die, and black women, and brown people. Me and Brother Ralphie, the Brown Berets, we marched in this community day in and day out, waking up the people, shaking the tree, telling people, hey, get involved. You could be next. And we marched in West Fresno, Black and Brown Lives Matter. We marched in Southeast Fresno, Black and Brown Lives Matter. And I told the people, we going up north now to River Park, and we're going to shut down their community economically. We're going to hit them in their pocketbooks to let them know that Black and Brown Lives Matter in Fresno, California.
That's right.
We sat there and Dyer dispatched over 100 police officers on motorcycles, a helicopter, undercover police, because we was willing to bite the bullet because we were tired of seeing black and brown men and women die here in this community. Black and Brown Matters Live in 2015. Why didn't the Fresno City Hall endorse it then?
Right.
We marched and shut them down for 9 hours in River Park. Because, see, what you have to understand, sister, which I think you understand, is that if you cannot hit the power structure in their pocketbook, you really ain't done nothing.
Yes.
See, Rosa Parks, when Dr. King was here, may he rest in peace, he understood that he told the black people, we're not going to ride the bus. We'll pick you up and take you to work and bring you home. What do you think happened to that city transit? Because black people wasn't riding the bus. It hit them in the pocketbook.
Mm-hmm.
Then they will come to the table. See, we ain't hit Fresno in the pocketbook yet.
Yeah, because, see,
Fresno understands. See, so that's why you keep hearing them say, oh, we want peaceful protests. We want peace. Now, you violently killed my son or my daughter, but we want you to have a peaceful protest, because they understand what they seeing in other cities. If Fresno go up in flames, that hit them economically. Now, I'm not sitting here endorsing violence and riot. So the FBI and those at City Hall and the police department record me right now. I'm not endorsing that. But I understand that when you lose money, then you listen to us. So that's why it's peaceful protest. We'll do whatever you want to have a peaceful protest, because they don't want to be hit economically and they don't want to be put on a national scale again. That Fresno is all messed up. But you know what? We're going to expose Fresno anyway. We've been doing it. So those seasoned organizers like myself, yourself, Brother Ralphie, yes, we're coming together. And we're not going to allow this city to co-opt the original Black Lives Matter here in Fresno. I'll be damned if that's going to happen, because those men and women that's in the ground right now, my loyalty is to them. 6 feet under the ground, covered up in a tombstone right now. That's where my loyalty lays. And if you think that you're going to create a commission, and you think that you're going to not put me on there, put other people on there who don't even know what the hell is going on, who haven't even supported families in the past 20, 30 years in this community, you think you can go around me? You go around me. Because my heart is always going to be with the people. And their hearts is always going to be with me. So it don't matter who you put on the commission. The people united would never be divided.
That's right.
And that's the motto that we grassroots organizers, real grassroots freedom fighter, revolutionary freedom fighters in this city that rose with me, that march with me, that protest with me. That's how we think. So I don't want you, no one, to get down and upset to say, oh, look at this commission. Yeah, it's top heavy with cops. I mean, was you really expecting anything different?
Right.
I mean, really? Was you really expecting something different? They did what they were supposed to do.
Yep.
Protect their interests, not your interests, not the dead people's interests, not the dead people's family's interests, but their interests.
Yes.
So they don't give a damn about Black Lives Matter. They just hoodwink you to think that they do. Because if they did, back in 2015, when we were marching and shutting down River Park, they would have changed policy then. But see, you have to understand how white people think. They know that black Negroes and brown people are honored to be on a committee and a commission. It makes them feel good. It gives them some hierarchy. But then the question becomes, Let us look at your track record. If you're going to speak for the dead, if you're going to speak for Brother Freddie Centennial, who's dead, then give account of your actions of what you have done in the past to be advocating for families under police reform. And if you haven't done nothing, then get the hell out of the seat. See, these are the games that continually to be played in this city.
Mm-hmm.
See, I don't care about your title. I don't care about your position. That means nothing to me. What I care about is your heart. What I care about, have you been transparent? What I care about, have you been there for the families? And if you haven't been there for the families, then you have no business sitting on no commission. Speaking for the people in this city.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And that's why, my sister, on another note, that's why they did not want me to debate Jerry Dyer, because they knew there's no way that we can put Harris up against Dyer, because we know Harris is going to tear him down. And we cannot have that on our image. This is all about image and money and power, sister. That's it. This ain't about equality.
Yeah, definitely, right. No, it's not about equality.
And that's why our children have to see real strong leadership speaking truth to power, not giving no marshmallow conversation.
Right.
You just go down the list of that commission. And you count, it may be two, minimum two, maybe three. I think there's, what, 30 to 40 people on the commission?
37.
I would say there's maybe three. Gloria definitely one. Our other sister, forget her name, starts with a G.
Yeah, Grisanti. Mm-hmm. Valencia.
Maybe three. Now, I'm not saying the other ones don't care. I said, have you been standing with the families? That's what I said. And I know those two have.
Yeah, and
so
you know, it's
some
community fighters for just a healthy community, but specific to police brutality, yeah, only two.
Oh, see, they just want to go out and grab people on boards. Oh, you're on a school board. You got a big title. You're African American. Come on on a commission. You're Mr. So and So. Oh, okay, a lot of people know you. Come get on the commission. How many of them people stood with the families who have lost their loved ones? You know why they can't stand with the family? Because you can't eat at the oppressor table and then turn around and want to hold the oppressor accountable.
Yes.
That's why they don't want folks like Reverend Harris and Brother Ralphie on the commission, because we're not going to read their damn script.
That part right there, that's what I wanted to get to. Not reading
That's
the script.
That's what the real issue is, sister. We don't read scripts.
Well, I'm hoping. Well, we know that most of the people on that commission read scripts. Probably, I'd say maybe four or five that won't read the script, but they'll be outnumbered, and they made sure that that was the case by those who will read the script.
You know, I was so glad not listening to your show tonight, how you articulated the political piece. I was so happy you told the listening audience this. How you explain how the police union puts up money for the city council. and the city council loyalty is to the police union, not the people. See, I keep telling everyone that it's a conflict of interest when you have the chief of police endorsing the district attorney, and the district attorney endorsing the chief of police to run for mayor. But let's just talk about that for a second. All right, Rick.
Okay.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for a second. Just for a second. Because, see, how you hear me talk is how I talk across the pulpit on Sunday morning. We keep it real and we keep it 100. Chief Dyer endorsed the district attorney to run for office, right? When he was the chief, right?
Yes.
When there's a police shooting, do you know who's supposed to investigate the police shooting?
Who's supposed
the
to investigate
attorney.
It? Oh, yeah.
The district attorney. The chief of police has 700 police officers. He turns around and endorses the district attorney with his name and his position as chief to run for DA. And when there's a police shooting, the DA is supposed to investigate the police shooting. Do you see that?
Yes. Yeah, something definitely wrong with that picture.
So they cover for one another. That's why you haven't had a police conviction in the city of Fresno since this police department been existing, I believe since 1949 or 1950. Don't quote me on that, when it was established. But that's why you don't have a conviction of cops in Fresno, because you got all this crap going on with these people covering each other's back.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, we're going to keep the pressure on Fresno. We're connecting our families on a national level now. We're going to get them outside of Mississippi, Fresno. They're going to see that there's other families that experience the same thing they have. And we're going to build power within Fresno. But I just want to congratulate you. I didn't want to come in. I started not to call, but I figured you wanted me to call.
Yes.
But I just wanted to share some insight on this political monster that's still existing here in Fresno and that we have to kill and bury. And we're going to be doing more actions in Fresno here soon. And so we want, again, to, you know, tell all of our family members to hang in there. We're standing with you. We're not sellouts. We're revolutionaries.
Yes.
No justice, no peace. Power to the people. Long live the gorilla. Black and brown power. Dr. Harris, 21st century revolutionary, and I'm out.
Yes.